This is Booker's here to see Inspector Pirbright.
Oh, good. Thank you, Pook. Come in, Mrs. Booker. Do sit down.
Thank you.
Very good of you to come.
Not at all.
I won't keep you long. Cigarette?
Thank you.
I assume you've heard that Mrs. Henrietta Palgrove was found drowned in an ornamental well in the garden of her home a few days ago.
Well, it was in all the papers.
Exactly. I must speak to you frankly and in absolute confidence, Mrs. Booker.
Yes?
You know Mr. Palgrove pretty well, don't you, Mrs. Booker?
Well, sort of. Yes, I suppose so.
How long have you known him?
Not all that long, really. About a year.
But you are on close terms, intimate terms. Look, I'm sorry, but we can't talk usefully until we acknowledge this basic situation. Now, never mind that awful police court word, intimate. You're fond of each other. You like to make love together when the chance offers. That's the situation, isn't it?
Well, yes.
Had Mr. Palgrove told his wife that he was in love with someone else?
Oh, no. I'm sure he didn't.
Did you ever meet Mrs. Palgrove?
Yes, once or twice. She was on some of the same committees as Kingsley.
Kingsley?
My husband. I met her sometimes at garden fetes and bazaars and things like that.
Was Mr. Palgrove present as well?
Only once, I think. Len doesn't like that sort of thing.
Did you ever telephone Mr. Palgrove at his home?
No, I don't think so. Not at his home. We were always very careful.
You never discussed anything with Mr. Palgrove at any time when his wife might conceivably have overheard? Now think carefully, Mrs. Booker.
Why are you asking me all this? Did she... Is she supposed...
Did she what, Mrs. Booker?
Did she kill herself?
No, we don't think so. We believe she was murdered.
No. Oh, God. Oh,
now,
God.
Now, how do you suppose it happened, Mrs. Booker? You can have no serious doubts as to who was responsible, can you? I mean, did you know that he might do that, that he intended...
No.
But he met you that night, didn't he? He says he came out to the cottage.
Well, I wasn't there. I should have been, but I couldn't get there.
You had arranged to meet that night, though.
I wasn't anywhere near on Tuesday night. I was in Nottingham, at a hotel. A friend of mine can tell you. She was with me. Brenda Foster. Ask her. 28 Queen's Road. She'll tell you. Or ask my husband. He saw me off at the station. And I've got the hotel bill. Here. Wait a minute. Might be in my bag. Oh, no. That's right. It's at home. But I'll let you see it. I'll bring it in. And I'll see Brenda.
Have you told your husband?
Oh, you don't have to let him know. No, please.
You'll have to be prepared for his finding out. It's not altogether in my hands now.
Oh, I see.
Oh, are you Sergeant Love?
Ah, yes.
Detective Sergeant from Flaxborough?
Yes, just visiting Nottingham in the course of my investigations. Murder, you know.
Oh, well, I was expecting somebody. Well, Ode.
Ah, well, I don't know.
Mr. Joblin said you wanted me.
Ah, you must be Miss Evanson. Yes. Please sit down, Miss Evanson.
Please, call me Jackie.
Oh, right then.
Short for Jacinda.
Ah, well, Jackie.
Not Jacqueline.
No, I see. Well, Jackie, it's about these photographs, the 21 copies. Do you remember the man who ordered them? This Mr. Dover?
Oh, I'll say. I remember him all right. I didn't like him. He was very bossy.
And that's why you remember him, is it?
Well, not only that. I remember him because of the picture, partly.
The picture of the lady?
No, the other one. It wasn't a proper photograph, you see. Just a picture cut out of a magazine or something. And I said, well, that one won't copy very well. And he said, why? And I said, well, it's not a proper photograph. Look, you can see it's what we call a half-tone reproduction, and it won't copy, not all that clear. And then he said, well, I want it done just the same, and thanks for the lecture, but will you kindly get on with it, miss? So I said, just as you like then, but don't blame me if it looks all muzzy.
Oh, quite right. Do you think you could describe this fellow, Miss Evanson?
Well, like I said, bossy and sarcastic. It was dreadfully rude the second time he came in, you know, when one of those pictures had got lost.
Yes, but what did he look like?
Well, nothing much to look at, really. Sort of young, middle-aged, not tall, a bit pasty-looking. Oh, and pop-eyed, I noticed that. His suit could have done with a press, too.
Colour of eyes?
Oh, I don't know. Sort of muddy-coloured, I think. I wasn't all that bothered.
Eh?
Didn't notice that either. I'm not sure that he had much. Mousy, I think.
Thin and mousy. Anything else you can remember?
Afraid not.
Thank you very much, Jackie. You've been a great help to me in my inquiries.
Oh, pleasure, I'm sure. Try.
There's just one more thing, though.
Yeah?
This picture, the one he wanted 21 copies of, do you think you could describe the person it showed?
Oh, but it wasn't a person.
Wasn't a person?
No, it were a dog.
A what?
A dog, a little woolly dog, begging.
Mortimer, we've gone into this already. I've given Mr. Pirbright an undertaking, and I do not care to dishonour it. You must at least see what he wants.
Really, Lucy, a policeman?
Mr. Pirbright is not at all a policeman in our sense of the word. He's a most charming man, and, as I hope and believe, a tactful and realistic one.
I bet he doesn't know about Uncle McNamara.
There's no reason why he should interest himself in our good treasurer. He's far too busy trying to find out what happened to poor Mrs. Palgrove to worry about charity registration formalities.
Mrs. Palgrove? Which Mrs. Palgrove?
The Mrs. Palgrove, naturally.
But is her husband called Leonard? Owns a factory or something?
Yes, odious man. Oh. Fast cars and hair oil. A bottom pincher. She was drowned, you know. Didn't you read about it in the newspapers?
How extraordinary. Leonard happens to be my correspondent. Oh. Or was going to be, rather.
The case?
Yes.
Well, well, what a small world it is.
Good day to you.
Good day.
Pirbright, Detective Inspector, Borough Police.
Oh, yes.
I'm interested in certain photographs.
Photographs? Never handle that sort of thing. You should know better than to ask.
Well, what I mean is...
All right, then. Here. All I got. Honest.
Great bosoms of the world. We seem to be at cross purposes. The inquiries I am making concern an order for 3 photographic prints that was placed with a Nottingham firm by somebody who gave this address.
What kind of prints?
Well, not this kind, certainly.
Ah.
The name given with the order was Dover. I know that's not your name, but I'd like to know who Mr. Dover is and where I can find him.
Don't think Dover's his real name, mind. Seen him about sometimes, but I don't know...
Why should he have given this address?
Accommodation address. Pays so much a week.
He gets letters then, does he?
Aye.
Anything for him at the moment?
Aye. Here. But do you think you ought...
Thank you.
...to do that?
An account for services rendered by... do you know a man called Mortimer Hive?
No.
Don't worry, I'll keep this. I'll explain to Mr. Dover when I see him that this letter was taken away on my responsibility. If he comes in before I can do so, you'd better refer him to me.
You're sure you won't have another cup, Inspector? It's still hot.
No, thank you, Miss Teatime.
Mortimer.
Thank you, dear Lucy. I am replete tea-wise. Oh.
What you have told me, Mr. Hive, interests me very much indeed. You're absolutely sure, are you, that the man you now know to be Leonard Palgrove did not move from that cottage during the whole time you were watching, from 10:30 onwards until the following morning?
Absolutely.
And didn't he leave the room at all?
Only twice, presumably to see a man about St. Paul's.
To...
take a leak, Inspector.
Ah. there's something to be said for being put under observation by a conscientious inquiry agent, it seems.
Thank you, Inspector.
Mr. Palgrove is a singularly lucky man.
You mean he was going to be arrested for poor Mrs. Palgrove's murder?
That was a distinct possibility.
You see, Mortimer? Aren't you glad that I dissuaded you from rushing back to London?
Well, as things have turned out...
Had you made arrangements to return before today?
I was going to return yesterday, as a matter of fact, but there have been so many counter-attractions.
Well, I trust they will not diminish. I'm going to need you.
No, I must leave tomorrow. My first duty is to my client.
The man who hired you to keep an eye on Palgrave?
His wife, Anne Palgrave, yes.
But he isn't your client any longer.
Until he pays up, he is.
Mortimer very foolishly made this man a promise. He undertook to leave Flaxborough not later than tomorrow.
Do you know why he was anxious for you to go?
Well, I...
No. But you know, Inspector, do you not?
I think so.
It is clearly your duty, Mortimer, to tell the Inspector this man's name.
Oh, that's all right. I know his name. It's Booker, Kingsley Booker. He's a master at the grammar school. Indeed, both you and I, Mr. Hive, met him there the other night, the career symposium. You were a little, tired, if you remember.
I remember very well. It was Tuesday, the night I was telling you about. Yeah, but how do you know about Booker?
I've spoken with his wife.
That's more than I've done.
Did you ever get your camera back?
I did. Some idiot had hidden it in a cupboard.
And that car? Did you find out who immobilised your car?
Well, I suppose it's just a high-spirited sort of town. Like Gomorrah.
No, Mr. Hive. As a good detective, you've already decided that these things were not fortuitous. You've seen them as part of a systematic attempt to keep you away from that cottage at Hamborne Dyke.
Yes. Well... Of course, sir.
You have also recognised as belonging to the same scheme the way you were manoeuvred that evening into taking part in that brains trust thing.
Oh, well, yes.
And then, when you had persisted, despite all obstacles in carrying your assignment through, you must have seen your brusque dismissal as a sign of your client's dismay at the frustration of his plans.
Oh, true, very true.
What do you know about Mr. Booker, Miss Teatime?
Well, my impression is that he's a pedagogue of the rather more obnoxious kind. Even among professional committee sitters, he's noticeably arrogant, prudish, sententious, intolerant and ambitious. His uncharitableness is of the order that ensures rapid preferment in the sphere of social welfare.
He is an animal lover.
That too?
So he would be a collaborator of Mrs. Palgrave?
They were as thick as thieves.
I see. Were you surprised, Mr. Hive, when Mrs. Booker failed to arrive at the cottage on Tuesday night?
Very surprised. It was a most elaborately arranged assignation. Really beautifully done. The idea was that she was supposed to be spending the night in Nottingham. But perhaps she told her.
That's exactly where she did spend the night.
Good Lord. But her friend was supposed
to... Her husband saw to it that she was on the train with that friend of hers. He took her to the station.
Well, really?
Ah, I see you've reached the correct inference already. Huh? You were employed by Booker for no other purpose than to learn in advance of a specific arrangement by Palgrave and Doreen Booker to spend a night together. Booker knew that he had only to prevent his wife at the last minute from keeping the appointment for Palgrave to be stranded for the night, or for the relevant part of it, with no means of proving that he had not been at home murdering his wife. Better still, from Booker's point of view, was the strong likelihood that Palgrave would actually try and provide himself with an alibi for the sake of his respectability, an alibi that was bound to be disproved once a murder investigation got underway. Now we can see, Mr. Hive, why your perseverance beyond the point at which Booker wanted you to quit was so embarrassing to him.
You know, what's rather puzzled me right from the beginning is why Booker picked on Mrs. P. I thought a lot about this, but I can't quite see the logic.
Now, Mortimer, you must stop hiding your light under a bushel. False modesty does not deceive a shrewd young police inspector, as it might me. Admit that you know perfectly well why Mr. Booker behaved as he did. Or am I to guess, and will you say if I'm right?
All right, Lucy, you can guess.
I've already mentioned that Mr. Booker impresses me as an arrogant and uncharitable man. With arrogance goes jealousy and a tendency to be vengeful. Someone has stolen his wife. Very well, that man must lose his. But as he obviously doesn't much value her, the account must be balanced by extra payment. What more fitting than conviction for murder, and what more convenient to arrange? The life of some perfectly innocent, if not particularly endearing, woman is an irrelevancy in the reckoning of a gentleman such as Mr. Booker.
Oh, full marks, Lucy.
Yes, indeed. I wonder, Miss Teatime, if you'd care to try another piece of mental divination. You do seem rather good at it. And tell me, what do you suppose was in Mrs. Palgrave's mind when she wrote this letter? Here. How on earth was she induced to write such a thing?
Why, Inspector, this is a standard piece of modern public relations technique. It's a whimsical method of soliciting donations, you see. The letter purports to have been penned by a dog, in danger of being put to sleep to satisfy human convenience. A picture of the beast is appended as a rule in order to sharpen the appeal to the emotions. Sometimes there's a paw print at the bottom. Very heart-tugging, you must agree.
A dog? Then that letter had nothing to do with Mrs. Palgrove's death. It was just coincidence that a number of people received it on the same day as she was killed.
It's for you to decide that, Inspector. For my own part, I should be inclined to be wary of coincidences.
Well, we shall probably never know for certain, but it's quite conceivable, then, that it was Booker who devised the letter and prevailed upon Mrs. Palgrove to type out copies. And these he undertook to post for her. He could have kept them until the right moment arrived, removed the attached photographs, you'll notice the pinholes, by the way, yes, and then sent them, or some of them, to the people he thought would best serve his purpose. I think it was originally his intention to substitute for the animal photograph a print of a picture of Mrs. Palgrove herself. We know that he ordered 3 such copies from a Nottingham firm, but something went wrong and they weren't delivered in time.
You're being remarkably frank with us, Inspector.
What you mean is that I'm being remarkably indiscreet. You may be right. But in saying these things to Mr. Hive, I prefer to think of myself as confiding in a professional colleague.
Ah!
The point is that I am faced with a considerable difficulty. It is from Mr. Booker that an indiscretion is required, not from me. But how is he going to be persuaded to commit one? What evidence we have against him is in solution, so to speak. It needs one admission from him around which to crystallize.
Suppose, You see, the last time I was talking to that fella, he practically threatened me, and I didn't like it. Guilty conscience, obviously. I wonder if I were to upset him a bit more.
Now, do be careful, Mortimer.
I think I'll ring him again. May I use your phone, Lucy?
Just a minute. Is there an extension?
That is the extension. The switchboard is in the next room but one as you go away from the staircase. There'll be no one there at the moment.
Oh, give me a few seconds, though I don't suppose he'll give anything away over the phone. Try and make an appointment. That'll give us time to arrange things.
Now, to be careful, Mortimer.
Now, don't fuss, Lucy.
I know that whenever you adopt that D'Artagnan swagger, you inevitably end up in trouble.
Booker here.
Yeah, don't ring off. This is extremely important.
Who is that?
Hastings, but don't ring off. I've got something urgent to tell you. Are you listening? Dover, I said, are you listening?
All right, what is it?
Well, don't you know?
The money, it's there. I sent a boy.
I don't mean the money. I'm talking about Folkestone.
I don't think I follow you.
Folkestone. I know who he is.
Well?
He's a man called Palgrove. His wife...
Now, look here, Hive. I'm not concerned with this business anymore. It's all forgiven and forgotten. You'll have the rest of your money just as soon as I pick up your account. Or tell me what it is now, if you like.
But...
I'll put a cheque in the post tonight. Will that suit you?
Well, it's 85 guineas, actually. I tell a lie, 89. There's been quite a lot of...
It'll be waiting for you when you get back to London tomorrow.
No, I'm not going to be paid off like a taxi driver. I consider that you owe me an explanation.
Of what?
Well, it's all right, then. Of this wretched woman's murder.
This conversation is becoming a little too foolish to be continued over the telephone. I think it'd be better if you come over here. Straight away, if you wouldn't mind.
Hello? Hello?
Well done, Mr. Hyde.
Ah, my dear Inspector, did you hear that? We are to beard him in his den.
One thing must be understood. In your own interests, you must avoid provoking the man too rashly. I shall keep as close to you as I can without arousing his suspicion. If he incriminates himself in my hearing, well and good. But for heaven's sake, don't drive him into making an attack on you or anything like that.
My dear chap, this is no time for boasting, but if you think I have never faced danger, you're sadly mistaken. I have collected my fair share of honourable scars, as Lucy Hare will tell you.
I will tell the Inspector nothing of the sort, Mortimer. Neither bedroom nor barroom wounds qualify for medals in this country, and even those have long since healed in your case. It's only your juvenile exuberance that is undiminished, and I'm afraid that it'll get you into trouble.
Heavens above, woman! Would you have me grow old? I'm a soldier of fortune, and justice is my new captain. Off we go, Inspector. Bye-bye, Lucy. Wish me well.
In a pig's eye, I will. If I let you out on your own, you'll be trying all sorts of Rupert of Hentzau nonsense. I'm coming with you.
Forward!
Can you still see him, Inspector?
Yes, just. It's difficult with the sun reflecting off those glass doors, but I can just make him out. He's still pacing about in the entrance hall.
Oh, I really should have thought to bring my binoculars. My eyesight simply doesn't stretch beyond 100 yards these days.
Ah.
Yes, what is it?
He's talking to a boy, asking him if he can find Booker, I imagine. Yes. The boy's nodding. He's going off into the school.
Oh, Mortimer hasn't followed, has he? We simply mustn't let him out of our sight, Inspector. He's no match at all for that homicidal fart, Booker.
Don't worry, I don't intend... Ah!
What now?
The boy's returned. He's speaking to Mr. Hive and pointing. He's giving him directions. Yes, Hive's going through the inner doors into the school.
Oh, no.
Oh, he's bumped into the headmaster coming the other way. He's past him. He's gone.
Oh, yes.
Come on.
Yes, yes, quickly. We must follow. Mortimer is bound to get into difficulties.
Ah, Inspector Pirbright, this is a most fortuitous meeting.
Mr. Clay.
I was about to telephone you to inquire if you would be good enough to attend the next meeting of our little debating society.
Mr. Clay, a man just went past you. You know him, Mr. Hyde.
Ah, yes, I thought it was he. Can't think what he wants here. However, about the debating society...
Mr. Booker, where's Mr. Booker?
With his class, of course. Now, the motion to be debated is that the laws of Great Britain have been framed for the protection of property rather than that of the individual.
Mr. Clay!
Proposition, I grant you.
Will you shut up?
I beg your
you
pardon.
You may take your debating society and stuff it where it will keep you warmest.
Really, madam, I...
Kindly stop gurgling like an emptying sink and tell us which class Mr. Booker is taking and where they are.
Oh, really, madam. Inspector.
Where are they? It's most urgent, Mr. Clay.
Well, what day is it?
Thursday.
Thursday. Just after 3:30 p.m.
Yes.
Let me think now. Yes, swimming. Swimming. They'll be getting ready for the pool. Mr. Booker should be in there already.
The swimming pool?
Where is it?
Which way?
Why, I must say...
Where is it, man? Tell me or I'll choke the life out of you.
Straight through the hall and come on.
Oh, do hurry, Inspector.
I say...
You boys.
Me. Both of you.
The swimming pool.
Where is it?
Through them doors.
Right. Locked.
Break them down, break them down.
Inspector, I really must
think. Quick, lads, get one of those benches between you. You'll have to break the doors down.
You are.
Oh, don't stand there like a pair of constipated kippers. Do as he says, break them down at once.
Yes, miss.
Righto, miss.
Inspector, stop this. Who is this lady? Madam, I demand to know what you're doing on my premises.
Now, do you know what a battering ram is?
Battering ram? Wow!
Well?
Who are you?
Not us!
Well, come on, then, with me. Smash the doors down.
Stop that! Stop that at once!
Shut up!
1, 2, 3!
Ugh. Have you gone mad, Inspector?
And again. 1, 2, 3!
What on earth? Boys, stop that at once!
The Inspector told us to, sir. He's helping us.
Got to do what the Inspector says, sir. It's going. And again. 1, 2, 3!
Look! There's somebody in the water!
Mortimer!
What's old Booker doing?
All right, Booker, let him go.
What is happening?
You boys round the pole that way. I'll stop him this side. If he tries to run for it, stop him.
Stop him?
Hit him!
Hit Mr. Booker?
As hard as you can.
Kick the bastard in the ghoulies! That'll stop him! Mortimer! Help me to drag him out, Inspector.
I got him. Leave him to me.
Mortimer! Mortimer! You drowned him! Let me at him! No, Mortimer! Mortimer!
How are you feeling now, Mr. Hive?
Fine, Inspector. Top of the world, you know. Bit sick from all that chlorine, but...
Here now, Mortimer. Drink this at once. Every drop now.
What is it?
Hot beef tea.
Beef tea?
It was all that Matron had in stock. But don't worry, I found a quarter bottle of brandy that
cockspit of a headmaster had hidden in his desk and tip that in.
You interest me strangely.
And keep that blanket round you. You're still shivering.
Oh, do stop fussing, Lucy. I'm perfectly all right.
It's lucky for you that Miss Tea Time is so expert in administering the kiss of life. I really thought you were a goner then. I never cease to be amazed at the diversity of your skills, Miss Tea Time.
Oh, one picks up all kinds of handy little knacks as one journeys through life.
You must have had a very full and interesting life.
Indeed I have, Inspector, and I intend to enjoy more of the same. But whether you will or not, Mortimer, will depend upon your keeping out of bravura scrapes of this sort in the future.
Oh, we got him there, Lucy. We got him.
Correction. He got you.
Do you suppose I might get some sort of award for gallantry? Always impresses the ladies, that sort of thing.
If he had held you underwater for another 30 seconds, any such award would have been posthumous.
But I was the bait, Chessie, Lucy, to catch the bounder. There's only one thing worrying me.
And what's that, Mr. Hive?
Well, now that the bounder's under lock and key, and as I was instrumental in putting him there, I don't suppose he'd be too keen on settling his bill. And I was rather relying on that money to take a certain young lady away for a weekend at that perfectly delightful resort along the coast, Brockleston-on-Sea. I don't suppose police funds could help me out in the circumstances, Inspector, as I find myself temporarily strapped for the readies, and...
I'll see what I can do, Mr. Hive, in the circumstances.
Yeah. And then again, I shall have to replace this suit, of course. I mean, a fella can't escort a cher ami into a 5-star hotel looking as if he's sleeping rough, can he?
Oh, Mortimer.
I mean, far be it from me to ask for, charity.
Charity Ends at Home by Colin Watson was dramatised by Christopher Dennis. John Rowe played Pirbright, Paul Downing, Love, Anne Rye, Lucy Teatime, and Geoffrey Banks, Mortimer Hive. Peter Rylands was Pook, Tricia Wilcock, Doreen, Catherine Hunt, Jacinda, Peter Wheeler, Clay, Chris Hargreaves, Fry, and Russell Dixon, the murderer, Booker. Charity Ends at Home was directed in Manchester by Tony Cliff.